time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And our show is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find them on the web at www.hydramay.com, H-Y-D-R-A-M-E.com. It is all-natural, organic skin nutrition. It just masquerades as a lotion and as shaving products and lip balm and things like that. It's actually skin nutrition, and it's very reasonably priced, so please do give it a try if you haven't yet. And my guest tonight is Don Joseph Goey, and this is going to be really interesting because it's kind of a smattering of science and a oh-my-God story and, you know, a few other things. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and Don has some exercises for you that you can use to de-stress your life. And the name of his book is Mystic Cool. So welcome to the show, Don.
Thank you very much.
I am very interested in having you relate your story and what brought you to this whole point. But if you would first give a bio for the listeners so we know who you are and where you came from and all that stuff, and then just launch right into the story.
Well, I've had a long career in you know, what's come to be called human potential. It started out with Carl Rogers, the father of humanistic psychology and his approach, and wound its way through the labyrinth of life. I ended up at a place called the Center for Attitudinal Healing, where I was the director for 12 years. And there at the center, we worked with people facing some of the most stressful situations any of us will ever face. People facing life-threatening illnesses, parents who'd lost children. We worked in the prisons with lifers over at San Quentin. And the State Department sent us over to Croatia and Bosnia during the Bosnian War to work with war refugees. And so what I've learned in, you know, the course of my career is, first of all, about stress, about what it does to a human being, how it blocks their innate potential, how it blocks the possibility for living a good life, you know, success at every level, at the level of health and wealth and love. And but more profoundly, I learned from the people that I worked with about the power of a fearless attitude to move us from feeling overwhelmed by circumstances to a way of being that makes us larger than circumstances. And that's the power of peace. That's an attitude of peace that produces that, and it changes everything. It's a change that changes everything. And oftentimes, you know, we think of peace as complacency or withdrawing from the world, but the kind of peace I'm talking about is this dynamic attitude that allows us to face challenges. You know, challenges come and go all the time, some of them more severe than others, but to face those challenges without being afraid. And by virtue of that peace, that fearlessness, to change our entire experience, regardless of what's going on outside. And so that's been my work.
That is the trick. And, you know, I was so impressed by your story about what kind of brought you to that, the personal travails that you've gone through. Would you mind talking about that?
Well, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Years ago, I had this high-powered job at Stanford Medical School. You know, I'd worked hard climbing the career ladder and thought that I was headed for even greater things there. I was pretty young when I landed that big position. And then, in the course of 1 week, my whole world came crashing down on me. My boss and I, we didn't see eye to eye, and I got fired. Mm-hmm. And 9 days later, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I was married, you know, with 4 children, and I had a high mortgage payment that unemployment insurance, you know, and disability wasn't going to cover, not even close. And the doctors told me to prepare for a paralyzed face, for being half deaf, for needing to use a walker to navigate across a room. And I thought at that time, you know, who's going to hire an executive like that, especially one who just got fired? and all the signs that I could see. You know, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and stare out into the dark. I don't think I ever felt more alone and more afraid or more stressed than I did at that time. I thought I was doomed. I thought we were all headed for the poorhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to make matters worse, my marriage, which was already in trouble, began falling apart. You know, all the stress and the fear of the situation that we were in just widened the cracks that were
sure.
already there. And then I had this awakening, this kind of epiphany. I saw mm-hmm. with real clarity that the worst part of the stress that I was feeling had more to do with what was going on inside of me than what was happening to me from the outside. I think I reached this point. I think I had a panic attack, a terror attack. My wife and I had this fight. I stepped out to the deck to have a cigarette and calm down, and I began ruminating on all the things that were going wrong and falling apart and how bad it was, how bad it could possibly get. And I started spiraling down into this place of terror. And I reached this point where I just almost ceased to exist. And then on the other side of it, I began to come out of it. It was like the phoenix rising from the ashes. Although it was a very calm, sweet kind of moment. And in that moment, as I said, I could see that the fear that I was in was the real problem. That the fear that I was in and the stress it was causing me, I could see that, first of all, the fear and stress were the same thing, and that the fear that and the pain that was causing me was the thing that was going to checkmate me. It was the thing that was going to make things get worse. And mm-hmm. at this moment, you know, I had come out of this panic attack, this terror attack, and I really was at peace. And I felt okay for the first time in weeks, maybe months. And I had the recognition that if I could just be at peace, if I could just stay in this zone, I would be okay. Because by definition, I already was okay if I was at peace.
mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to go back to work after I'd been fired. They'd offered me, you know, an extra month to transition things. And, you know, I was at that point kind of spiteful, said, "The heck with you guys." But after this epiphany that I had, I wanted to go back. I wanted to set things in order. I wanted to leave things on a positive note, on a good note.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wanted to put to the test whether this newfound sense of peace was actually worked in the real world. And, you know, to my delight and my amazement, when I got back to work, all of the old stresses didn't get to me. I actually began to look at people who I thought were my enemies, who had, you know, led to my demise in the department, a very competitive department. And I began to realize I didn't know that. I didn't know that for sure. I couldn't verify that. It could have been my own misperception, and it didn't do me any good, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I wanted to take good care of my brain, not stress it, before I went to surgery. And I just got into this positive, peaceful zone and didn't leave it. And the whole world changed in the most ordinary way. You know, the most ordinary things that used to be difficult weren't difficult anymore.
Yeah, imagine
and
that.
And I went through the surgery, and everything went really well with the surgery. I think I my attitude shift of moving from fear to peace established that mind-body connection that they talk about.
That's quite a blessing that you got, having that moment that happened and recognizing it. And I think that there's such a gift in having that, and so many people don't get there soon enough, and they spin their wheels and they just feel hopeless and feel like it's the worst thing that could ever happen to them when they lose the job, or, you know, they get a diagnosis of cancer or whatever, you know, or sometimes even less than that, and it just upsets their little apple cart and they freak out. And I think if they could have that moment of peace that you tapped into when you thought it was all lost, that's amazing. And I think that that's something that, you know, people should read the book and should really see, you know, really get it in their eyeballs, the kind of problems that you were presented with and the seeming impossibility of coming out of it. And yet here you are. You've written the book. You are counseling people in corporations all over the world. You've got all kinds of things going on that I'm sure you didn't expect were going to happen before you went through that piece.
No, that's very true. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
you know, people will say to me at times, too, about when I, you know, talk at conferences and that kind of thing, that invariably somebody says, well, you know, you had an epiphany. You got lucky. Most of us don't have an epiphany. I've never had an epiphany. Mm-hmm. And you know, this epiphany that I had was part panic attack. You know, I mean, it wasn't like the heavens opened up. It was, I literally, my thought process cast my mind into hell. And mm-hmm. by some grace, the epiphany was by some grace, I came out of it. And I came out of it into this experience of peace. I came out of it into this experience also of something that I couldn't specify or identify, but the feeling of something loving me, something mm-hmm. Hanging out with me, something supporting me. And that was a big, big part of it. But I tell people, you know, I don't think we have to have our lives crash and burn for us to wake up to the power of peace. We don't value it. We don't put it first. We put fear first. You know, we're still kind of out there in the jungle, and we think that fear is the thing that's going to save us, and if we're not fearful enough, then we won't be prepared or we won't cover our butts enough, that sort of thing. And it's mm-hmm. just not true. It's just the fear and the stress that it generates and the damage that stress and stress hormones do to our brain is very debilitating. It's really debilitating to our attitude. It's debilitating to our emotional state. You know, stress reactions were meant to throw us into survival mode. And so those stress hormones, that's what they're doing. They're kicking us into survival mode. And, you know, evolution in its wisdom figured out that if we were facing a rattlesnake or a bear, loving kindness wasn't going to be the emotional state was going to help us. And as a result, when we're stressed a lot, we're in emotional and negativity. Biologically, our brain shifts to emotional negativity. It's just not worth it. It doesn't give us anything that moves our lives forward. But peace does. And yet, it's the place we end up after we've messed everything else up and failed at everything. We finally get to that humble place where we can be at peace. Well, we can change that. We can put that first. We can make that our principle. The one thing we put first as we approach everything. And if we do, you know, with the neuroscience, the breakthroughs in neuroscience shows us that we begin to remodel and reconstruct our brains and grow a magnificent brain that can tap a lot more potential than we've realized previously.
And that's something that I've been interested in quite a while. In fact, I think it was last January, I think, I had Brain Month, or one of those months, I had a Brain Month, and I had Dr. Marco Iacobani on, and you mentioned him in your book also about the mirror neurons, and also had on, gosh, I'm blanking out here, had on quite a few people that were brain scientists. And, you know, we were talking about how the neural pathways are affected by stress and by different injuries that happen physically, but that you can regrow the brain and that you can actually reroute those areas of stress that have really led you down that wrong pathway. And, you know, I've talked about that with listeners quite a few times, but, you know, the big question I get from everybody is, oh, yeah, well, that worked for you. How is it going to work for me?
Works for everybody.
Yeah, it works for everybody. That's the thing. In your book, you know, you've got your subtitle is A Proven Approach to Transcend Stress, Achieve Optimal Brain Function, and Maximize Your Creative Intelligence. And looking over the exercises that you've got in there, I said, yeah, you know, that would do it because the brain is like a muscle. You have to exercise it. And if you don't, you lose it. So I find that, you know, with your unique take on this, because you went into it through a panic attack, which is not the way I would have chosen to go into it, but
I don't recommend it. Yeah. Everybody listening out there, I don't recommend that as the approach.
Yeah, because I mean, you're either going to freeze up and fall over, or you know, something really interesting is going to happen either way. But you know, when I went into peace myself, it was on purpose. You know, I'd had so many near-death experiences, it was like old hat. But I went into peace because I had that inner knowing of knowing I was too much of a drama queen and it was creating problems in my life. And I really needed to get to that point where life became smoother and without all these wah type of moments, you know, where people are going, my God, thank God I don't have your life. You know? And so I really recommend to people that they practice these exercises so that they can move down that pathway into peace and have their life work a heck of a lot better. And yeah, it takes a little work. You know, you can't just sit there and go peace. You know, you got exercises and build yourself up to it, kind of like meditation. And so I'm really happy to speak with you about this and have the listeners know what you've been through, because what you went through was hell. And your hell was not just a few moments. Your hell was what, how many months did that all that transpire over?
Oh, probably. It was probably a question of years, you know. You know, one of the things people want to know often why we are such a stressed-out culture. And I think the problem actually goes beyond our borders. It's worldwide. But, you know, why do we have stress reactions? And the reason is because our brain got wired for fear.
Mm-hmm.
When you see somebody in a, you know, the throes of a stress reaction who's either completely overwhelmed or acting out aggressive or withdrawn in some way, what they are patterning is fight or flight. What they are patterning is a stress response system that's about survival. And that system was really needed when we were out there in the jungle, but we're not in the jungle anymore. And we don't need it. And it gets in the way of it blocks our happiness. And so it used to be thought by scientists that, you know, once your brain got set, once you got wired for fear, I mean, the point that people need to understand, you cannot have a stress reaction, biologically cannot have a stress reaction unless some form of fear is present.
Mm-hmm.
And we get wired for fear genetically because of that stress response system that, you know, biologically, you know, the genetics still think we're out there in the jungle. It creates this fabulous stress response system. And the problem with the stress response system is that it cannot tell the difference. It's part of the primitive brain. It stops developing in us at 2 years old, so it's got the intelligence of a two-year-old, which is why a stressed-out person looks like a two-year-old. We say, you're acting like a two-year-old. And neurologically, that's an accurate statement, actually. But we get wired for it, and past experiences fortify that wiring, and science used to think there was nothing you could do about it. If you were born, you know, wired for pessimism, you're going to die whining, and there's nothing you can do to change it. And then 10 years ago, all of that was disproven. And now it's definitively understood that we can change our brain structure, our brain chemistry at any point along the lifespan. And it turns out that ability to what triggers that change, it's called neuroplasticity, what triggers that change in our brain structure and our brain chemistry so that we can get beyond stress, get beyond fear, is attitude. Our brain is a servant, we're its master, and the way we direct our brain to do what we want it to do is through our attitude. That's where it picks up its signals from us. So if our attitude is fearful, if our attitude is stressed, if our attitude is pessimistic, our brain's going to wire for that. But if we change our attitude, if we change it to peaceful, to open, to positive, our brain will begin to wire for those circuits to generate that experience in us. So the idea is change your attitude, change your brain, change your life. And the wonderful thing about it is that it's the change in attitude. What the tools we need to use to change our attitude, they're very, very simple. And the change occurs in a relatively short period of time, within 6 to 8 weeks, if you practice. And you don't, and it's not a question of practicing every minute, 8 hours a day. It's, you know, basically it's the attitude, the stance you take as you walk out into the world and correcting to it when you, you know, you slip up. That's the good news. So, and so you're, you know, what you were talking about, anybody can do this. This isn't just for somebody who's special. This is in all of us, and it couldn't be simpler.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I can feel the listeners right now going, okay, give me an exercise I can do that's really simple where I'll get it. You know, I can feel their confusion.
So, well, let's do
they
it.
Need to be
let's
led out of the jungle here, Don.
Okay, let's lead them out of the jungle. Let's lead all of us out of the jungle. So let's go back to, let's set the stage for this. So we'll go back to the statement that biologically you can't trigger a stress reaction unless some form of fear is present.
Mm-hmm.
And that our primitive brain that's in charge of all the stress we experience can't tell the difference between a real and present danger, like a bear in your backyard, or one that you make up in your head. And the majority of stress reactions most of us have come from our ability to create all kinds of stressful events purely in our heads that excite these wildly strong emotions, sometimes destructive emotions, that create this perception of threat, that our survival's threatened, and send our body into an uproar and our life into overwhelm.
And yeah, the like old Mark Twain what if. Said,
yes. It's like Mark Twain said, my life has been a series of terrible calamities, some of which actually happened.
I love that.
And why we all laugh at that is because it's so true. It just points back to this fact that we invent so many stress reactions purely in our heads, and we pay the price for them. And they're about nothing. They're all related to mere thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our brain can't tell the difference between one of those and a real and present danger. It sets off a stress reaction, and we pay the price for it. So if we can collapse that psychological fear at the point of inception, which is most often in the thoughts that we think, we can avoid a stress reaction altogether. And the more we do that, the more our brain will begin to wire. So one of the tools that I have in there, and all of these are proven, as you said when you read the subtitle for the book, everything in this book has been proven either through research or in clinical experience. It's not stuff I'm making up; it's stuff that's been shown to work. And mm-hmm. this clear button comes out of cognitive behavioral therapy. So here's what you do: imagine that you are becoming stressed. Something's happened. Somebody said something to you. You got a piece of bad news, whatever. And you begin to notice you're getting stressed. You're beginning to think fearfully. You can feel your body animating into a stress reaction, and you catch it. And instead of letting it go any further, you imagine that in the palm of your left hand, there's this button, this biofeedback button. And you press it. And you imagine that in pressing it, it sends a signal to your primitive brain, to the amygdala, which is in charge of the stress response. It sends a signal to that part of your brain, and it quiets it down. Now, remember I told you that part of our brain that kicks us into stress reactions is got the intelligence of a two-year-old, so you got to treat it like a two-year-old. You don't use logic with a two-year-old. You distract them. So you press the button, the signal goes back there, you imagine it quiets the primitive brain down, and then you start to distract it by, you count to one. And you see that number one is a color. So you take in an in-breath, you count one, you see one is red, take in the second breath, you say two, you see two as blue, you take in a third breath, you see three as green, you take a fourth breath, and you relax and you let go. And most of us will, and then you locate yourself in the present moment, right here, mm-hmm. right now, and relax into the present moment. And most of us will not be able to remember what it was we were thinking, all the fearful thoughts we were thinking, that were about to catapult us into a stress reaction. And here's what's happened with your brain just through this simple little exercise. You have transferred control now of your brain from the primitive brain, the reactive part of your brain, to the higher brain, where creative problem solving lights up. Those are actually neural networks, where your emotional meter switches to positive. That's actually a neural network. Where the middle of your brain lights up, which makes you great at relationships. All of those systems now come on board, and you start seeing solutions instead of the myriad number of problems that stress always presents you that ultimately overwhelms you. Instead of that, you see solutions. And the more you do that, the more you make that shift, the more an attitude of optimism takes over, and more an attitude of faith in yourself, self-confidence takes over, and your brain begins to wire for that. Just off of using this little tool.
Yeah, and see, that's something that's that simple is really what people need. And I like to warn them, too, that, you know, when you get to the certain point where really nothing bothers you, people around you will be bothered. It will bother them immensely. And, you know, some of them might actually ask you how to do this. And others will get really furious because they're not getting the reaction out of you that they're trying to get. So,
you know, and that's true. There's also a process in my book. It actually relates to mirror neurons, which really has to do with the quality of your presence. The quality of a positive, peaceful presence is contagious, as you say. Mm-hmm. Some people will react to it, and you're not responsible for that.
Right.
But you can actually control influence the way a conversation goes, the way a relationship goes, by you locating yourself in the center of yourself, by choosing to be at peace, by not reacting to your own thoughts or to the projections of others, and continuing to hold that person in with unconditional positive regard, continuing to relate with empathy to that person, and at the same time to continue to empower what it is in you need to empower at that moment. And it creates a kind of presence that lights up mirror neurons in them to the positive. And now you've got a chance for what they call neuroscience, they call resonance, where you resonate. The two of you, your brains are actually resonating with each other instead of in dissonance, in which you're attacking or defending back and forth with each other. So you can, this rewiring actually can rewire your brain into a condition in which it makes you great at relationships.
Yeah, and I think that as you were talking about the two-year-old brain, I think that when you're doing this, and especially if you know about the mirror neurons, which really create our state of empathy, but as you're doing this, you're actually bringing somebody up out of that primitive two-year-old brain, because you're refusing to allow them to continue to act like a two-year-old child. You know, and you're basically saying, hey, you know, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to bump up to this level, which is really where you live anyway. And they're kind of like, oh, okay. And then they play at a higher level. And so what I see happening with this is the more people are practicing this and getting into it, the more chance that we actually start responding to each other from that higher level, which means the better the planet gets. So it goes beyond just a personal relationship. I think with just one person doing this, even just for their own peace, they're going to automatically raise the consciousness of the planet without even trying, you know?
Yes. Yes, yeah. You know. It kind of happens one person at a time. And, you know, it's that old thing that Gandhi said is be the change you want to see in the world. And that's how the world changes, by you being that change, of course. And getting there, you know, it invariably involves rewiring your brain, which means practicing a new attitude. It's like a new attitude that leads to a new turning, that leads to a new brain. another thing Gandhi said is the difference between what we do and what we are capable of doing. The difference between what we do and what we are capable of doing would suffice to solve most of the world's problems. And I
well,
deferred, you know, and that it really is for sure.
Yeah.
Another tool that I teach people in coaching and in workshops is called transcending the background negativity. There's a neural pathway that runs from that primitive part of your brain, the fear center, that creates all these stress reactions and from them all the problems that we struggle with. And there's a neural pathway that runs from it to the higher brain, to what's called the prefrontal cortex, and where all those networks are that make you creative, make you positive, make you great at relationships. And when we're stressed, when our brain is, you know, full of stress hormones, that neural pathway begins to thin out. And what happens is when the neural firing occurs from the fear center to react, we're primarily talking about actually to overreact, to make a mistake in our lives from a place of misperceiving a situation fearfully, that comes out of that primitive part of our brain, boom, fires it up, and then, you know, 2 or 3 seconds later, we're left with a situation that's been unfortunate, that we're sorry that it happened in some cases. Well, what happens when you begin to shift your attitude and to begin to practice making this shift from fear to peace? That neural pathway, that's made up of these GABA fibers, begins to thicken. The GABA fibers begin to dense. It's called densification. They densify around it. And so when that neural firing happens, when the primitive brain goes, okay, boom, we're gonna go get this person. We're gonna do it. We're gonna react. And it sends the impulse up through that neural pathway. It moves at a slower rate. It moves slow enough, slowed down because of this densified neural pathway, the fibers on this pathway, that we actually, our higher brain can step in front of it. And now we're at conscious choice. Actually, it's a neurological description of how conscious choice happens. And so now we're standing there, and we're looking at this, I'm going to react like this. And then our higher brain steps in and says, you know, you reacted like this 10,000 times, and not once did it ever work out. and if we react like this, we're going to have to go to a forgiveness class or an anger management class. Or, you know, we're going to be sorry. And so we're not going to do that. And that's what gets asserted. And it's all because your brain structure changed, and your brain structure changed because your attitude changed. And your attitude changed because you were willing to practice these simple tools and to apply them, in a lot of situations. And so one of the very first things that I do when I coach somebody is I give them this practice called transcending the background negativity. And again, this couldn't be simpler. And the way it works is that I have people over a period of 2 weeks to track every negative thought that they think, everyone they can catch, and watch how that negative thought turns into an unhappy emotion, a difficult, uncomfortable, painful emotion. And As they allow that to come into awareness, all they simply have to do is to say, this thought, this feeling, is in me, not in reality. It's in me, not in reality. Their job is not to try to change it or argue with it or even feel bad about it, just to observe it and meet it with that statement. And then they finish it off by saying to themselves, although it's in me, this reaction is in me, it's not me. I'm like the blue sky. My real nature is like the blue sky. These are the clouds that cover me up. And just in doing that, I would say it's more than half the battle. That just doing that creates the shift as much as, if not more than anything else. Just that simple act of awareness. Because you're bringing the content that's tyrannizing you out of the unconscious And you can't change anything if you're not, if you can't see it, you're not aware of it. And just that simple act of awareness is incredibly powerful. And we know in neuroscience that it literally, physically slows the neural firing. And it begins to strengthen that, that neural pathway that leads up to the higher brain to get you to conscious choice. And now you're using your brain. It's not the brain using you anymore. You're using your brain. All out of this simple tool for awareness. People could start using that right away.
Yeah, and see, that's something that, that brings to mind some of the meditative techniques, too, in that, you know, don't expect to be perfect at it right away, but just practice it, because the more you practice it, the quicker and easier it's going to get. And then pretty soon, boom, you can be in the meditative stance completely in alpha, and sometimes all the way into theta in a split second, just because you practiced it. But it takes a few practices to get there. And I've had, you know, my own part of going into this with different meditative practices that I've done. And the first thing I was told was become the observer. You know, and basically don't react, choose to act. And people always say, well, you know, that's too hard. How can you do that? Well, no, if you do these little simple exercises, listeners, that Dawn has in the book, you will be able to do this. And so if you've tried to do that before and gotten frustrated, do these exercises, because what will happen is you'll find yourself catching yourself sooner and sooner. So like maybe you want to stop screaming at somebody, but you know, you kind of just fly off the handle before you even realize what you're saying. Well, when that happens, go, oh, darn, you know, I meant to catch that. And after you do that a few times, the brain goes, oh, you wanted to catch that. And then pretty soon, like Dawn says, you know, it slows it down and you have enough time to catch it. Well, maybe you're going to say, you know, 5 out of the 10 words that you would normally say. And then after a while, you're saying 3 out of the 10 words and then 2 and then 1. And then pretty soon, you're not even thinking about it because that pathway, that neural pathway has been formed. And now it's an automatic thing that you decide how you're going to act rather than react. And it's kind of interesting to watch people around you when you do that, because you'll step back and you'll look at them and you'll know exactly where they're coming from. You know, you'll know what's fueling them. You'll know what the problem is. You'll see what your part in it is. All that happens in a split second. And then you can choose how you're going to act towards what has been presented to you. And it really is simple. It doesn't take that long. Like, how long would you say for most people, Dawn, that it takes them to get to that point?
If they work at it, 6 weeks. I'm doing a teleseminar starting on February 15th, and it's an hour every week for 6 weeks. And the people that will attend that, when they if they tune in and they begin to work the process. And again, as I was saying, it's not like you're having to work this all day long. It's a question of awareness. It's a question of attitude. It's a question of the stance that you take, beginning to change your it's kind of a new turning, kind of turning in a different direction, and then staying with it. And what helps in doing it, like a teleseminar or working with a coach, is that then you're in a structure in which you're being supported to move forward with it. And when that environment's established and people are doing the work, they experience a big change in 6 weeks. There was a magazine that just came out with an article on the approach that I do. It's Outside Magazine. And I made that statement to them. I said, you know, a person who's struggled with stress can turn it around in 6 weeks. Their brain will restructure to give them more freedom and get them out of the hole that stress puts them in. And so they wanted to test it. And they said, so we're going to assign you a journalist, and you can coach that journalist 6 times over a period of time, and then she's going to write an article about you. And I was fine with that. You know, some people said, boy, you're taking a big risk here. But I know that will happen if the person does the work, and there's a whole mountain of research that supports that. You can have confidence in yourself that that you can change, and it's not that hard. And so this person initially approached it with that really good attitude. You know, she was a journalist, so she you know, by her, you know, she's a professional skeptic. That's what we want our journalists to be, is to be skeptical, and she, you know, she's a professional. And so, she didn't show up taking the bait hook, line, and sinker. She showed up willing to do the work and to see if it, make herself a laboratory and see if it worked for her. And then she wrote the article, and the article was immensely positive. Anybody can go to Outside Magazine and read it in the January issue. And I'm not saying this to blow my horn at all, or to get you to sign up for anything that I do at all. I'm plenty busy. But I say this to give you a sense of what you can have confidence in, neurologically in your own brain, biologically in your own system, and spiritually in your own heart and soul and attitude towards life. You mobilize those forces and you can move mountains, and you can overcome great difficulty. There's a lot of research being done right now in what's called epigenetics, where they find that the relationships that we've been in actually have the power to turn on or turn off certain genes. And so if we're in a, you know, if we had a childhood where parents were difficult, that will turn on, the stress response system, make it more active, and we're going to have problems with that. And we actually pass that on. We pass that on from one generation to the next. But the really good news about it is it's just as easily as it gets turned on, it just as easily can be turned off when you point yourself in this direction. So all this information I am giving your listeners is to let them know how cool they really are and how accessible this change is to them if they step into it.
Yeah, see, that's all it takes is a little bit of effort. Before I forget, please give them the information so that they can contact you about the teleseminar.
They can find out about it by going to my website, mrcool.com. The announcement about it is on the right side of it. And there's a place in there where they can email me and if they have questions they want to ask.
Excellent. And then for the workshops, where do you do those, or where's the next one going to be?
The next one is going to be in May, in California, in Marin County in California. I only do them once, sometimes twice a year. Mostly what I do is these teleseminars and the coaching, because of the book and because of wonderful radio shows like yours, I get people that, you know, are all over the place, actually all over the world. The internet radio is amazing how it just links us up across oceans.
I know, isn't that cool? I love it.
It's very, very amazing. It's very amazing. I was on a teleseminar that David Siegel was doing. He's a guy who started an approach based on a lot of what we're talking about called mindset. He'd be a great person to have on your show. He's one of the leading people in the world in this. And he had a person on the show, that a person on the teleconference that was calling in from Iran. And we were communicating, you know, through little chat box, you know, typing in messages. But it was just startling to me that the internet really brings us all together, despite the political differences that are getting generated in areas that we have nothing to do with, really, you know. And here was a man who was really interested, a person from Iran, really interested in this approach to bring to his own clients, to get them out of the stress and fear that they're experiencing. And here we are over in America, and that felt pretty world-changing to me. But that's
yeah,
it. That's why I don't do too many in-person workshops, one or two a year, because most of the people are just too far away.
Yeah, and it gets really difficult to travel all over the place. I found that out myself after doing it for 2 years. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, with all these things that are hitting the planet right now, that the major leaps that we're making in all areas of science and in our spirituality, you know, the more that we can get these messages out there to people that are really, really needing them, the better. And I love internet radio because of that, because we can get anybody all across the world and, you know, record it. They can go into the archives. I mean, it's fabulous. They can get exactly the information that they need. And I am very grateful to be a part of that whole thing, because I don't know, you know, what we did before then. It took years to get a book to print, and by the time you got the information out there, it was pretty much obsolete, especially in the case of textbooks. And with all these strides that we're making now in neuroscience, it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, really there are so many people everywhere who are coming at similar things and formulating something bigger than they thought would have been possible with their own thought. So they're bouncing these things back and forth, and it's like, wow. You know, it's actually a team effort without any formal request to be a team. It's just people trying to help people.
Yes, exactly. It is amazing.
Yeah, totally amazing. And now, what was David Siegel's website, too? Was that Mindful Brain, did you say?
It's Mindsight. MindSight, Mindsight.com. He's written a book. It just came out, called Mindsight. Wonderful book. And he's pulling all of these things together, and through them, creating an approach that really opens up the mind, opens up the brain to greater potentials, greater possibilities. He's really, really a wonderful, wonderful person out there doing this work. Very, very highly trained at Harvard. Neuropsychiatrist, and done a lot of good research and came up with this approach, and it's worth looking at.
But
it's very similar to the things that I'm talking about in Mr. Cool.
Well, you know, the thing that was really cool, too, about your book, you know, you've got a big section in there about recognizing the critical voice and refuting it. And, you know, this is the biggest thing I hear from people. It's like, you know, how do you stop the negative self-talk? And I just look at him and say, well, just stop it. You know, it seems real simple to me. Catch yourself and stop doing it. And you know, all I hear from people when I tell them that is, well, I can't do that. You know, and why can't I do that? And, well, first you have to observe it. But I like what you say here about how to refute the critical voice, you know, and about really checking it out and seeing if it's distorted or factually incorrect. And, you know, identifying the positive and looking for contributing factors and all this stuff, I was like, wow, you know, I know a whole lot of people that could really use this, because they really need to.
Yeah, that approach, that came from Seligman and his work at the University of Pennsylvania on learned optimism. And he really did take on that critical voice and came up with that approach and studied it pretty thoroughly and found that it really worked. It really helped to change people. You know, I mean, when that critical voice starts going, it distorts everything. It blows things out of proportion. It comes after us, you know. It kind of tries to tear us down. And we can learn. We can learn to quiet it down. One of the things that is really effective tool in dealing with that critical voice when it begins to talk to us, it's just not to believe it. So that you have I remember at one point early on when my book came out, somebody told me I could look at my rankings on Amazon.com. So I went and I looked, and they were dismal. And I thought that the book would be doing really well by this point, and I don't know why I would think that. It had only been out a couple of months, but it was like 150,000 or 200,000 in its ranking. And at first it just floored me. I was kind of like a deer in headlights, you know, and I began to notice that my thought process that it kicked in, it lit up those old buttons, and I started hearing myself say to myself, it's not going to do well. And all those years of hard work of putting this together and you know, carefully creating something that, that was simple enough, but true enough to the science that it could speak to people and people could see them, you know, all of that. And now it's not going to, and it's just, and I caught myself, you know, in the early stages. And that's the idea, is to get the horse before it gets out of the barn. And I looked at each one of those thoughts, and I said, I choose not to believe that. And another negative thought would come up, another pessimistic gloom and doom thought would come up, and I looked it right in the face, and I said, I choose not to believe that. I choose not to believe that. I did that about 3 or 4 times, and then I had this wonderful experience of expansion. It actually felt like the room I was in got larger and had more light in it. And I realized I gave it the slip. You know, what I call that is neural light. That when I don't give in to those voices, those fearful thoughts, when I find a way to quiet them to the point of they're extinguished, that everything expands suddenly. And I think perceptually what happens is all that higher brain stuff comes on and things look, the colors are brighter, the light is brighter, the feeling is bigger, you know, and so everything else looks bigger. What could be simpler than just not believing something?
Yeah, getting people to realize that they could, I think. And, you know, one of the things, too, that I think is real important for people to understand, and one thing that I have never seen in another book, and I read a lot of these self-help books and everything, obviously, but one of the things that really impressed me was your section on becoming a strength finder. Really finding your strengths instead of picking on all the things that are wrong with you, because we can always find tons of things that are wrong with us. And really it's our distorted perception of what's supposed to be right based upon what we've seen on TV and heard from other people. But when you really get people to sit down and start writing down their strengths and then to seeing those strengths in other persons and to be able to just kind of see what all the permutations of that particular strength is, that was really cool. And I was like, wow, that was really something. And I can tell you that, you know, the first thing I do when I'm working with somebody that has low self-esteem is I make them write down at least 10 things about themselves that happened during the day that are good. I never really got to the whole strength part. I just say, write down 10 things that were good, or 10 good things that somebody said about you, and I want you to really pay attention. And most of the time, they don't pay any attention. And, you know, it's kind of a common thing for people to hear every negative thing somebody has to say about them, but yet they won't even hear the positive things. And so I've had to go to extremes with a couple people, make them carry around a tape recorder and turn it on anytime they had an interaction with anybody, because they won't hear it. It's really weird.
And again, you know, it's what you're using as a intervention there is awareness, is getting them to be aware of what's going on, what that thought process is going. But you're really right about that. You know, Gallup organization did a study on over 200,000 workers, I think, in 10,000 corporations. Huge. Massive study, and it was all around strength finding. And one of the things they discovered was that most people, you know, there's the old saying of, work on your strengths, but work harder on your weaknesses. You know, lean into your weaknesses, make them strong, turn them into strengths. Well, what they find is that actually doesn't work. That, you know, and that the best solution is always, first of all, play to your strengths. And manage around your weaknesses. Your weaknesses are going to get in the way and bump you every now and then. But you can manage around them. Find somebody who has a strength in an area where you have a weakness and partner with them, that kind of thing. But the biggest problem that they ran into was absolutely seminal, and it was that most people didn't know what their strengths were to begin with. They were noticing it's one thing to tell people lean into your strengths, but how can you lean into something that you haven't identified? And it's not that we're devoid of strengths. None of us are devoid of strengths. we actually, you know, this brain of ours has 100 billion neurons, nerve cells in it. That's the equivalent of the number of stars in the entire universe. And it's all packed into the top of our head. It's the most remarkable instrument in all of biology. And it's hooked up with the most incredible system in the whole universe, the mind, the human mind. You put those two things together and get them humming, working well together, there's nothing it can't do, no matter who you are. And yet, the first thing you got to know is that genetically, and maybe even karmically, how did you get your brain wired for what kind of talents? And they always, the first place you can find them in investigating this is, what do you love to do? What do you really love to do? When you get a chance to do it, you get in that zone, you get to that top of your game kind of place. That's the greatest indication of a strength. And so, yes, in the book, in fact, I close on that with becoming a strength finder. And sit down and write down, you know, start slow. Write down three strengths that you have, three talents that you have. It doesn't matter if you don't use them. Is it a strength if you don't use them? Well, yes, it's still a strength. Is it a strength that if you've misused them? Yes, it's still a strength. And just find out what it is. Use your intuition. Use your heart. Use what you love to find out what it is. And then the next day, go out into the world and find ways in which you can begin to use it more. It may be 10% of the time, but find ways you can use it more, and then you can increase it. You will increase it, you know. You will be motivated to increase it because, you know, there's nothing more motivating than something we love. And so you will increase it. But you got to start identifying them. And you got to start paying attention to them and nurturing them as you would a child, as you would something precious, because it is precious. It's the most precious thing about you.
It definitely is. And, you know, like I've talked to some people, always flabbergast me, you know, when I talk to somebody and they go, oh, I'm so bored. And I look at them and I go, really? There are so many things out there. How could you possibly be bored? And it's because they don't do anything. You know, or I'll ask them, they'll say, well, I don't want to do this job anymore. And I say, okay, what is it you want to do? And they don't have the faintest idea. And I have to take them back to when they were a kid. Okay, when you were in your childhood, what did you play at? What did you love to play? And they go, well, you know this, but I can't do that. And I just look at them and go, why not? Well, you know, now I'm grown up. Okay, that means you can get paid for it now. And, you know, so why not, you know, go build on that or find some aspect of that that gives you joy. You know, find some way to make it pay. And, you know, maybe it's not going to pay you as much as, you know, whatever job you're doing. But if you're happy, then I think that's worth a hell of a lot more than any amount of money. You know, if you're living a happy and relatively stress-free life, and you're enjoying every moment that you're in, you know, money suddenly doesn't hold the appeal that it used to have, because most people, they're trying to get money so they can be happy, you know, and then they realize after they get it, money doesn't buy happiness. It can buy a lot of stuff, and it can buy a lot of experiences, and maybe then you can figure out what it's going to take to make you happy. But if people would go and practice these things that you've got in your book, and start to really look at themselves as a work in progress instead of somebody that's already failed, and just realize, hey, you know, I got the key to changing everything, then they could reach that happiness and have that internal peace that you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
And it could only take 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. You know, take as long as you want, but start moving in that direction. My heart really goes out to people who struggle with stress and chronic stress, who are anxious and sometimes frightened by the world. Look out at this economy and just begin to feel smaller and smaller as they hear the bad news. It hurts. And you know, when the message of my book is that all that can change. And, you know, you can face some of the most difficult challenges in life with an attitude of trust, an attitude of faith, and find an inner triumph just in your capacity to remain at peace in the middle of turmoil. You know, we actually have that capacity. It's in our attitude. You know, I really think our attitude is what defines our spiritual nature. Everything that we do, I think of the world, actually. When people talk about the world, what comes to mind for me is everything that I don't completely control. And when I make a list, and, you know, in the seminars and coaching I do, I have people make a list of those kinds of things. Everything you don't control. And once you get going, you begin to realize it's huge. And I mean completely control. We influence things, clearly. Some things we influence more than others, but when you get to the bottom of the investigation, what you will find is that the only thing you completely control in this life is your attitude. One thing. And that one thing, attitude, which I think is the heart of your spiritual nature, is sufficient to bend the world in your direction if you use it properly. But if you don't control your attitude, if you don't seize that power and begin to direct it, and of course my prescription is, where do you direct it? You direct it towards a dynamically peaceful way of being, a dynamically peaceful attitude. And if you don't do that, it's guaranteed you will influence little else in your life. And that's a painful place. But all that can change. I don't care if you're 80 or 90 years old. That guy, Daniel Siegel, Dr. Siegel, the one that I was talking about who wrote the book Mindsight, he has a great story in there about a 90-year-old that is in psychotherapy with him who goes through an enormous personal change at 90. His brain can do it. The brain is plastic. It's kind of like forever young. As long as you use it, it's gonna stay vital and alive for you. And if you feel like stress has been getting the upper hand with your brain, you can change all that. You know, we don't have to talk about in terms of stress reduction anymore. It didn't work that well. It's got a limited impact. What neuroscience is talking about now is a stress solution. The capacity to change your life, to let go of fear, to learn to become masterful at letting go of fear, to the point the fear doesn't run your life anymore. And if that's the case, by definition, you will be stress-free.
Absolutely. Well, Don, this hour has just flown by. Man, I'm just so grateful that you came on to help the audience to find some ways to really be at peace. And I think that, you know, by having people like yourself on, it really helps because, you know, somebody has a message that'll affect this group, and somebody has a message that'll affect that group. And I like that you have all the science in there, you know, where you show people this stuff really makes sense. It's not something that you made up. It's something that you found and lived through some pretty catastrophic things that would have caused a lot of people just to take the gun to head, you know, but you came through it. And that's a triumph in itself, and bless you for writing this book and getting it out there so other people can manage to get through their difficult times. Because not everybody...
Well, bless you for what you do, too. Bless you for what you do, too. It's a wonderful thing you do and what you bring to people as well. And my heartfelt good wishes for peace and happiness to everybody that's listening to this program. It's your God-given
and
right.
Absolutely. So go for it, people. Get that peace. And at the very least, you know, you can go check out Don's site, and that is www.mysticcool.com. That's mysticcool.com. And we have been talking with Don Joseph Goey. And please do check it out. You know, check out his book. I mean, when you really see in print what he went through, it'll make you feel a lot better about your life. You may be kicking yourself in the butt going, what the heck am I complaining about? Look what this guy had to go through. So, yeah, do give it a shot there and check out Don's stuff. Check out the teleseminar. You know, get yourself working on stuff. Most of us need kind of a kick in the butt to make ourselves do things. And so if you're signed up for a teleseminar and you have to go there and do this stuff every week, then that might be the impetus that you need to...
Oh, there's one other thing. Can I mention one other thing?
Sure.
That my publicist will punch me if I don't. We're doing a stress contest, a stress eraser contest, and they can get to it on my website. And we're asking people to describe who would you be if you weren't stressed. And the person that comes up with the best answer wins 6 coaching sessions with me.
Oh, hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'm glad I remembered to put that out there to everybody. So
yeah.
Go on there. All you got to do is just write a couple of lines of who you would be if you weren't stressed. And the best one gets 6 free coaching sessions.
All right. Please do spread that around, too. Let's get as many people de-stressed as possible.
Yes. Thank you.
I have always thought that stress was an unnecessary evil. So, yeah.
I think it's the same way. That's interesting. I think it's exactly the same way.
Well, thank you so much, Don, for being on, and thank you for writing the book, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Okay, and our show has been brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find them on the web at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com for all natural organic skin nutrition. Just smear it on and it absorbs right in. It's really amazing stuff and very reasonably priced. Please do check it out. They have men's and women's products. And so there's no excuse, men. You don't have to be girly to try this stuff, okay? And as always, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
Your sleep. Rise to a new day with each.